It's Saturday night.
The kids are in bed.
Which means we did it. We survived another week.
So let's talk about it.
From our latest homebrew project.
To kids' crafting projects.
Just talking life with two young kids and two dogs. Grab your favorite beverage. Sit back.
Relax.
And see where the conversation takes us.
Sometimes we don't even know until we get there.
This is the Craft Parenting Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Craft Parenting Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Joe Ludwig, and with me is my lovely wife and co-host, Caroline. How's it going, Caroline?
We're being super secret agents in the public, in full view of everyone. So maybe not so secret agents? I don't know. We're at Westside Brewing. We decided to go wild today while the kids were being watched by my mom and Larry.
Yeah, so as you can possibly hear in the background, we are on location.
Yep. It's date night, but we have to work. But it's still date night. Is it work when you're doing what you like to do with your spouse?
I don't know. I don't think so. We just got the biggest stare. So we have another great episode this week. Hillary is back.
Yep, for part two of the episode that was supposed to be about pregnancy, but was like 5 minutes about pregnancy and like 3 hours on not pregnancy, but baby related things. So it all works out.
So ironically, we are at a brewery.
Which Hillary could not enjoy unless if she was our DD.
Right.
Because then she could take funny videos of us.
Well, Hillary isn't here. We pre-recorded that.
Oh, this is true. We would have made a big mistake if we were supposed to record with Hillary right now because I don't see her.
But more on that later. Right now, let's talk about the week.
On Sunday, we woke up in the middle of soybean fields again. What is this craziness? Is it Groundhog Day? Nope, we were at the farm. So we finished up our farm weekend with our friends. We unfortunately didn't get to play as many board games as we had wanted to. You didn't play any board games.
I didn't play any board games.
In your defense, though, you were very tired. I just decided, I'm going to stay up all night. I don't care.
The kiddos wouldn't sleep.
They were being a little dramatic, but we still love them. They eventually slept. It worked out. So we cleaned up the house and said goodbye for our final time of going out there to have fun. If we go out to the family farm again, it'll probably be a work day. So Monday and Tuesday were pretty boring, but Tuesday we learned that Elliot can go up the stairs.
Yeah, that's scary. He's 7 months old.
Yeah, so he can go up the stairs with major support. So the support is just so when he decides to sit down, he doesn't just roll down the stairs. He just stays on whatever stair he's on. But he can get up all of our little 7 stairs by himself.
That was a milestone that Lily accomplished closer to 9 months.
Yeah, I want to say Lily was a lot older when she did that. And Lily had a lot more access to the stairs. We haven't really let Elliot get on the stairs a whole lot because there's a gate between the living room and the stairs. We have to keep Lily contained. It's exciting and scary.
Yeah, and then Wednesday, we had a date night.
Yep, we went out to eat.
Without the kids.
No kids. But we got to see lots of dogs.
Yeah, we ended up at Nations in Westwood.
Yeah, which is an old firehouse that they converted into a restaurant. They won a bid, I think, to be the place that went in there. And we're really excited about it. We like getting Nation whenever we can. But sometimes it's hard because they're really busy. Wednesday, they weren't too busy, though.
Great. And then on Thursday, Elliot successfully pulled himself up on pretty much anything that he wanted.
Yeah, so Elliot was able to, like, have help standing up. Like, if you kind of pulled him up, his legs would immediately go straight, and he would try to stand, but he would be really wobbly. He'd be prone to, like, fall down. Now he can pull himself up on the couch, on a railing, on a chair, on your leg, on Big Sister. He can pull himself up on a lot of things. So he's really tall.
He's really tall, and Elliot's Enyer's mom and baby nurse, she predicted that Elliot would walk by 10 months old.
And he's really trying to prove her right, because he was trying to roll in the bassinet at the hospital, and then he kind of gave up on it for a while, and then he just super went into rolling and trying to sit up, and really he just wants to chase his big sisters around, both Lily and the dogs.
Yes, so he is very determined to prove her right, and he really wants to run around with everyone.
Yeah.
God help us when...
They're going to run in opposite directions, so it'll be interesting.
I don't know. I think he's going to follow Lily.
But she's going to run away from him.
So then they'll be going the same direction.
Kind of. We'll see.
It's when they're older that we have to watch out for that.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Friday. And we went to a local chicken restaurant.
Yep.
For dinner with your mom and Larry.
Yeah. So there's a local restaurant called Ron's Roost that's on our way home. And I use it as a landmark for Lily. I say, look for the chicken. And so now Lily knows the chicken. So she knows that if we're near the chicken, we're starting to get close to home. So we were trying to figure out where to go to dinner. And we started making decisions way too late. So we're like, okay, where can we potentially go that has enough seating where six people showing up at a little after 6 o'clock won't have to wait an hour? And we called around, and lots of places had to wait.
Pretty much everyone had to wait.
Yeah, and Ron's Roost had a very short wait. And we discovered that the reason why was because everyone was staying away because there was an elder class reunion going on. And no one wants to hang out with the elder boys.
You just alienated half our listenership.
Who do we know that went to... Okay, wait. No, we do know some people that went to Elder. I mean, I went to Colrain. I have to give crap to Elder. It's in my blood.
Elliot might go to Elder.
And I'll give him crap for it. Like, in a loving, motherly way. I'll make sure he just knows it's because I have a school rivalry with a high school that I don't necessarily care about. But... It was ingrained into me.
But at Ron's Roost, you know how restaurants and like Kroger and stuff, they have...
The little prize machines where you put in a quarter and you get something out.
Yeah, or the crane.
Yeah.
You have to navigate the joystick and navigate the crane. Well, at Ron's Roost, they have something kind of similar. You put in a quarter and there's a bunch of eggs and then there's like the mechanical chicken in the middle.
Yep, and the chicken turns around and clucks. And that is like any time that I go to Ron's Roost, we have to put a quarter into the chicken to get a silly little prize egg where we don't necessarily like want the prize that's in the egg, but it's tradition. So we're going to do this. I get a big kick out of it. So that's the main reason why.
Lily just stared at it and she was like, what is this? I don't understand.
That just means we have to go more often. So she gets it. I used to go there all the time with my grandparents. I think all of my grandparents, like both sides of the family, even though one side didn't even live close to it, we would go there all the time with them. Probably because I liked it. I don't know. It's good fried chicken. 10 out of 10 would recommend.
It is very good. I forgot how good it was. I don't usually get Ron's Roost, so it was definitely a treat.
Yeah. So I want to say sometime during this week, we got big news.
We got big news?
Yeah. Big news, like a dozen of news.
Do share.
UC joined the Big 12 conference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so our alma mater, who used to be in the Big East.
Then was in the ACC. I think there was another conference in there too. I don't know.
I don't know what current conference they're in.
I don't know either, but I know now they're going to be in the Big 12 next year. So all of our...
Your mom said 2024, I thought.
Oh, I don't know. They're in the Big 12 now. That's all I know. Or will be in the Big 12.
I don't know why I'm listening to your mom, but she listens to the radio all day.
Yeah, so she's up on these things more than we are.
So I'm assuming that she picked that up from the news that she listens to.
Yeah. On Saturday, UC played Notre Dame, and we crushed them.
Yeah.
And it was exciting.
And it's a good thing, too. And I posted on Instagram that I was drinking Brian Kelly's tears.
Oh, yeah.
And to understand that reference, you have to really understand UC football. Because Brian Kelly used to be the head coach of the University of Cincinnati.
And then he left UC to go to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And hey, guess what?
And we kicked their butt.
So hard.
And Notre Dame is a powerhouse school. It's not Ohio State, but it's up there.
Yeah. And while we didn't get to watch the game, we got to listen to part of the game. Because we were out and about with the family. Because if you listened to last week, or if we listened to the episode that we released recently as of this recording, where we talked about good German food, we were eating some delicious German food.
Yes, we attended the Cincinnati Döner Schwaben Oktoberfest, which was a lot of fun.
It was. Lily had a blast. I didn't get to spend a whole lot of time with Lily on Saturday, but any time that I ran into someone that we knew in passing, I was like, yeah, my daughter's around here somewhere. They'd be like, oh, yeah, she's on the dance floor dancing with so-and-so's kid. And who so-and-so was would change every time I talked to someone. So she was just basically dancing with any kid who would let her dance with them. She ran around so much. She slept so hard.
Yeah.
Not super hard Saturday night. Because we are recording this late, I'll do spoilers for next week's episode. We also took just, because we took Lily and Elliot on Saturday. On Sunday, we just took Lily. And I ran around with Lily, like literally ran around with Lily the whole time we were at Oktoberfest.
I did too.
Yeah, whenever I was getting us beers, you would run around with her.
Quote, getting us beers.
I mean, and talking to people. What's the number one rule of Oktoberfest?
Don't let Caroline wander.
Yep. And we get home about 6-ish. Lily is a hot mess. So we just get her changed in pajamas, get a snack in her belly so she's got some food. And I want to say she went to bed a little after 7, which is like a full hour and a half before she normally goes to bed.
She went to bed really early on Sunday.
Yeah. And then I'm at work on Monday, and I get a text from Joe. Lily just woke up at 9 a.m. Homegirl slept for like 14 hours. She needed some Oktoberfest recovery, too.
We'll get into that next week, though.
Yeah, that's fun at Oktoberfest. I ate so much cake on Saturday, but it was so good. There was a hazelnut raspberry cake that I need to make because it changed my life.
Okay.
So that's going to happen at some point. I don't know when, but at some point that's going to happen.
You said it tasted like peanut butter and jelly.
It did. It was really, really good. I'm like, I want that cake again.
Well, those were the highlights from the week. It was a fun week, and we're going to do it all over again. So now it is time for What's Bugging Caroline in Children's TV.
Okay, so what is bugging me in children's TV this week is the quality of the YouTube videos for Reading Rainbow. Like, I try to find ones that are clear and we can read, and it's like not working out well. But I mean, you can still get the gist of it, but I want some nice, crisp Reading Rainbow. Where do I find this? I need this in my life.
You can probably buy it.
Okay, but I need help with that. Send me links.
You don't want to buy it?
Well, no, I can buy it. I just need to know where. And it can't be VHS tapes. It has to be like a DVD or electronic or something.
Okay.
Because you won't let me get a VHS tape player.
No, why would I let you do that?
Because I let you bring your PS2 into the house. And your Sega, which you still haven't gotten to work. So, I'm going to drink a beer now and give you a wifely stare.
Are you done with the...
That is the end of my rant, yes. It's a very short rant today.
Oh. So we did mention that we are at Westside Brewing.
Yes. And thanks to them, so far we have not gotten kicked out. So yay!
So we both have some adult beverages in front of us.
And surprise, surprise, they're both Westside. Yeah. Who'd have thought?
So what are you drinking?
So
and
I'm,
you're drinking... What are you drinking
it in? I'm using my 2021 Mug Club mug, which is a joint mug that we share.
Yes.
And I am drinking Westside Brewing's Blood Orange Common. So I'm going to hazard a guess that it's their common with some blood orange in it. And it's very yummy. I mean, I'm a big fan of blood orange. I'm a big fan of commons. I was not allowed to get a mug of the blood orange dippa. I mean, I don't understand why. It's only 9.4%. And I totally don't have to work tomorrow. So that wouldn't be a terrible idea at all. But I will settle for this blood orange common, which is not really settling because it's delicious. So their common ale is clean, crisp, and refreshing. A slightly sweet, lightly malty aroma fades into dry, snappy finish. The perfect beer for those looking for a lighter, more delicate flavor. It's really yummy. But what are you drinking?
I am drinking. Do you know that? Wait, am I pulling it up? Or are you pulling it up?
I thought you were pulling it up, but I can pull it up. I accidentally hit back too many times.
I will pull it up.
3 days later.
I am drinking the Westside Porter, and it is 5.8 ABV, 42 IBU. The description is deep brown bordering on black. This porter boasts a malty aroma filled with chocolate notes and a hint of roast. Malt sweetness pairs with flavors of Baker's chocolate and lightly piney hops for a smooth, full-body drink with just enough bitterness to keep it balanced. I'm a big fan of porters and stouts.
People are always, I mean, like, I say people very generically. We know some people that are very hesitant about dark beers because obviously if it's a dark beer, it's so flavorful and it's going to taste kind of burny. Like super roasted, I don't really know. We have so many people that are like, I won't drink a dark beer. And I'm like, well, try a Guinness. No, I won't drink a dark beer. Guinness doesn't taste like a dark beer.
It really doesn't.
It's like your gateway dark beer.
A Guinness is as black as can be. And it's just, it's really smooth. And it doesn't taste like what it looks like, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, give it a shot. Now, part of this is when we went to Napa Valley for our honeymoon, neither of us were really super into red wines. And then it was just, we did wine tasting after wine tasting after wine tasting. Because you're in Napa Valley, you're going to do like 20 wine tastings. And if you're not going to do 20 wine tastings, why did you even go to Napa Valley? But when we left, most of the wine that we brought home was dark Cabernets and Merlots. And I mean, we can drink anything now. We just have to give it time and get it used to your palate. Maybe pair it with some good food. Try something new. That's my challenge for you, dear listener. Try a beer that you don't think that you'll like. Maybe it'll surprise you.
Steven, if you're listening to this, we have a pineapple beer just for you.
Just for you, Steven.
So now is the time when we cheers.
Prost. Okay.
So, Prost, I don't think they could hear that, but we did cheers. Cheers to the weekend, and Lord help us in the week ahead, because starting tomorrow, we are going to have to do it all over again. More crazy adventures are ahead, and we will make sure to share them with you each week, right here on the Craft Parenting Podcast.
Okay, so for this week's main topic, Hillary and myself are continuing our conversation where we kicked the boys out and said, we're going to talk about lady things. So if you are not into like 2 hours of two women talking about breastfeeding, you probably don't want to listen to the rest of this podcast because that's like all we talk about. But it's really good and useful information. Even if you're a dude, if your significant other is able to have children and is planning to have children, like this is information that you should know. Because you should be super supportive of whatever decision they make and help support them in whatever ways that you can, which sometimes includes changing diapers at 2 o'clock in the morning so your wife is able to go to the bathroom and get a drink of water before she is attached to a child for like 10 minutes and then has to get said child to go back to sleep.
Okay, so let's pack up the microphones and you get to go talk to Hillary.
This is your friendly reminder that we are not a podcast that you should use to seek medical, financial, tax advice, anything like health and safety related. We are not the experts. We do not have degrees in any of this. We just have life experience and we can share our life experiences with you. But these decisions or any questions should be raised to your doctor because they know you and your medical history better than me.
What was his Apgar when he, what was hers and then what was his when you ended up having them?
They don't tell you the numbers.
They don't? Can you not ask?
Well, they didn't tell me for Lily. I want to say for Elliot, let me look up what the numbers are out of because if I don't look it up, I'm going to get it wrong.
Because I'm currently taking, one of my notes here was the education I'm currently doing. So like we read the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. And we read the book, well, we listened to that. I think it's been great because I've been able to listen to these books with Steven. So he's also getting the information. But we listened to What to Expect When You're Expecting. We listened to The Happiest Baby on the Block, which teaches you like the five S's for soothing. And then I'm listening to, by myself, Dr. Robin's breastfeeding course.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the one? Oh, that is the one. So that's the course where she's teaching you different things. And they talk about if your baby has an Apgar score of 7 or above, they should be brought immediately to you and should not have anything done to them at all. Like they
Which
shouldn't
is
have
what
anything.
The nurses will do. Mm-hmm. So this is from HopkinsAllChildren.com, which is the Johns Hopkins Medicine website.
Mm.
So the Apgar score is APGAR, and it stands for appearance, pulse, grimace, activity, and respiration. So those are five things that they're going to look at 1 minute and then 5 minutes after your child is born. And so I paid a little bit more attention to it when I was in labor with Elliot than I was with Lily, just kind of because I knew more of what to look out for.
Yeah.
And I was a little more like in the moment, kind of circling back to having a birth plan with both Lily and Elliot. Like the seventh nurse that I had was actually there for my delivery.
Wow.
So I had nurses for as short as 20 minutes or as long as like 3 hours before one of their other patients got to a point where it's like, hey, this one's about to have a baby. Peace out. This is your new nurse because I have to go take care of them. Or, hey, it's shift change. So here's your new nurse because of shift change. Hmm. So having a birth plan, like there's some stuff that they'll ask you, like, do you want your baby circumcised if it's a boy, which you can change later on. Like they're going to ask you like 10 different times
right.
to confirm. Like if you say yes, like they're asking me like, okay, let's go snip, snip. They're going to ask you like 8 more times to confirm whether or not you want to do that.
How soon was that done for, if you don't mind me asking?
It was within the first like 36 hours.
Okay.
It was about 24 hours after birth.
Mm, okay.
Because they did it the same time that they did all of his 24-hour checks.
Okay.
All of my nurses for Elliot knew Lily.
Yeah.
Because I was like, hey, these are the questions I'm going to ask you. This is why I'm asking them. And like, I want to say like the nurse that delivered Elliot, my doctor was the one that told her while I was in the room. He was like, yeah, this is why she's asking all of these questions. Like before I had even gotten to that point, he's
right.
like, yeah, we're just keeping an eye out for this. This is why we're like, not necessarily handling me with kid gloves, but like making sure that I was well informed.
Yeah.
Because I was, they knew what they were getting into with
right.
me. And so when they broke my waters with Elliot, he was like, all clear, you're good.
Oh, the
like, because that was sure like, that was a very big anxiety inducer for me. Was okay, yeah. we're about to do this. I need to know.
This, I don't know if this is going to be like traumatic for you, fast question, but if he had broken your water and there had been meconium staining,
I might have been like, either bump this Pitocin up to 11
or
let's get this kid out now, or like, let's go get this kid out now. Now,
like C-section, like, it wouldn't could have, you have done that?
It like, now I'm saying that,
yeah,
but I'm also like, that extra like 3 hours wouldn't have necessarily made a difference,
okay,
because at that point they're already in it.
Yeah.
It's probably better to go through a vaginal birth if you can.
Because it squeezes them, right?
Well, it squeezes them, so you're going to get some potentially stuff out of them, but really, meconium's really thick and sticky. You're not going to get that out of them.
Okay.
But it's more, there's less trauma to you as a person.
Yeah. I know. I don't want a C-section. Oh my.
So you want, so it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to get this kid out of me right now. But now instead of a like 6 week, not necessarily like minor recovery, because it is a recovery, versus like 8 weeks of I have stitches, I have to be very, right. very tender about things instead of just tender about things.
Right.
You do have like some lifting restrictions. I mean, all that goes out the window when you have a toddler, because toddler yeah. does not understand. But it was easier for me to deal with Lily versus, oh, now I have stitches across my belly that I have to deal with as well.
Every mom's a super mom, but those C-section moms, I can't even imagine that major surgery and then, yeah. and then being like, I have to care for my one to two, you know, one to two, three, several children and like, oof.
Yeah. So back to Apgar scores.
Yeah.
So they rate on five things. So appearance is their skin color. Pulse is their heart rate, which they'll like measure. I can't remember if it was with their fingers or with a stethoscope. I want to say it was with a stethoscope because they like all had stethoscopes. Grimace response, which is their reflexes. Activity, which is their muscle tone. So like, are they kind of moving about? Are they squirming? And then respiration. So breathing rate and effort. Like, so from John Hopkins, All Children's website, doctors, midwives, or nurses add up these five factors for the Apgar score. Scores are between 10 and 0. 10 is the highest score possible. Sidebar for me, odds are very low that your child is going to score a 10, but that's fine because few babies get it. That's because babies' hands and feet remain blue until they have warmed up. So like Elliot was still a little blue when we left the hospital, but we left the hospital when he was less than 48 hours old. And they're like, oh, it's fine. You have a kid at home. Like, you got this. And we're like, we went home with a 16-day-old child.
Right.
We knew what we were getting to. So for appearance, a 2 is your normal color overall. So their hands and feet are pink. A 1 is normal color, but hands and feet are bluish, which is more likely what your kid's going to get. Like your kid's going to come out and they're going to look kind of purple.
So they
and then they're
up,
slowly going to get peach.
So they add up all of those to get to the Apgar.
Yes.
Okay.
And then so 0 is their bluish gray or pale all over.
Okay.
Which probably was kind of what Lily was still at 5 minutes. It wasn't until she was like 10 or 20 minutes old that she started to look a little bit more peach. Their pulse is their heart rate. Normal is above 100 beats per minute. And then 1 is below 100 beats per minute. 0 would be if they have no pulse. I really hope your kid has a pulse. Aww. I wish all the best for any pregnant mother. So grimace is their reflex irritability. So 2 is they pull away, they sneeze, they cough, or they cry with stimulation. Mm. A 1 is they have facial movement only with stimulation. And then 0 is they have no response.
Did your babies cry?
Yes.
They
both cried.
Crying.
And then you cry because you're like, okay, if they're crying, odds are a lot higher.
Yeah.
And then so activity is their muscle tone. So 2 is they have active spontaneous movement. A 1 is their arms and legs are flexed with little movement. And a 0 is no movement and they're floppy in tone. Respiration is their breathing rate and effort. 2 is a normal rate and effort, good cry. 1 is slow or irregular breathing and a weak cry. And then a 0 is they do not have any breathing.
I'd be interested if there's like YouTube videos, I'm sure there is, where you can like learn to do your own Apgar score. Like, not that you'd be.
I wouldn't recommend doing it. You're gonna
be
like, so with Lily, I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention.
Yeah.
I was more like, I have this baby. And then I was like scooping stuff out of her mouth. I'm like,
aww.
Why am I scooping stuff out of her mouth? Like I'm still scooping stuff out of her mouth.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I feel like that shouldn't be a thing. And then they're like, hey, we're gonna call on the pediatrician, but the pediatrician's gonna bring friends. Like, it's fine. They always bring their friends with them. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my God.
What's going on? But then with Elliot, like, all of the nurses wear watches, whether they're a smart watch or a regular watch. Like, they have something that has a second hand.
Yeah.
Because like, as soon as the kid is out, they like tell the doctor this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then any other nurses that are in the room, they're like this time. And they've got like 2 or 3 clocks in the room as well, mm-hmm. that like nurses can see. And then at 1 minute, they're like 1 minute.
Yeah.
And they kind of do all this stuff really quickly with your kid. And like, if they're good, like the only thing they're really going to do is like, they're going to take their pulse. And that's because everything else you can relatively visualize. And then they'll say 5 minutes and they'll do it all over again. And I want to say with Elliot, his Apgar was like an 8.
But you had him on your chest already?
Yes.
Okay.
So I had Lily on my chest for at least 5 minutes,
okay.
before they took her away.
Oh, makes me so sad.
And so at 1 minute, they'll cut the cord.
Yeah.
Because you can do like a super delayed cord clamping and like hold your kid and the placenta after you deliver the placenta.
Right.
So I listened to the pregnancy podcast, and that was pretty much like the only pregnancy podcast that I listened to. Like, the name of it is legitimately the pregnancy podcast.
Right.
But I really liked her, and she didn't give me any kind of reason to be like, I'm not going to listen to this anymore.
Right.
Like, she had episodes where I was like, like, I'm not necessarily sure that I agree with what you would do in this situation, but she would give like all sides. She did a lot of like evidence-based stuff. And listening to that podcast, it was, well, really anything past a minute is kind of negligible as far as getting more blood from the placenta.
Yeah.
So really you don't want to clamp it right away.
Right.
But anything past a minute doesn't really make a difference.
Was it done pulsing?
I don't know.
Okay. I know it's all.
I was too busy with the child.
I don't blame you. I was just thinking because they were talking. One of the things I was listening to was saying like on my birth plan, I want the like cord to be done pulsing. I don't know. So did you deliver? And then maybe you don't know this either, but did you deliver the placenta before? I guess you probably delivered the placenta after the cord was cut.
So the placenta can come, I think it's like as late as a half hour after you deliver.
Wow.
Now, what they'll do is...
push really hard on your belly?
Well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
They'll kind of tug on the umbilical cord to kind of help coax the placenta off, but they don't want to like pull on the umbilical cord because they don't want to break the placenta because then you can have lots of issues.
Right.
So they do kind of want to like give it time to come away on its own because basically it has to like peel itself off of your uterus.
Right.
And they don't want to like create a gaping
and
hole in your uterus.
And they pulled on it, huh?
I think so. I don't know. Again, distracted with child.
Right. That's again, like, that's another thing. I'm like, how much do I have to write in this plan that, like, I don't want you to pull on the cord because I don't want an inverted uterus? Like, there's all these things that I'm like,
and
I know they do this all the time. Don't get me wrong. But there's so many, like, horror stories of these doctors, like, hurrying things along. Like,
and
hurry
I
up,
never...
get birth to the placenta. Like, we're going to just pull on this.
So I never felt like any of my doctors were rushing.
That's good.
The only, like, thing that I wasn't super happy about with Elliot, but they got their ish together very quickly, so it was fine, was I had to like pause when I was like super far along with Elliot because the doctor wasn't in the room. And it's not necessarily like the doctor has to be in the room,
right?
But especially with everything that I had dealt with Lily, I wanted someone there who was going to be able to be calm,
right,
and who was able to tell what was going on without me potentially putting something into the situation that's not there, because I just don't know.
Right.
Because kids do look purple for a long time. And like that could have potentially like sent me over the edge if I didn't have somebody being like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So like I never found out with what Lily's Apgars were. But based on this, let's see here. Probably say like 2-4. See, I want to say she had a lot of this stuff, but it was probably her respiration and her appearance that were really bad.
Yeah.
Because she was pretty active. I want to say she had a grimace. Her pulse was fine, but her appearance was not great. I think Elliot's score was an 8 because they told me that when they did bedside rounds the next morning. That was when he was over 24 hours old. They try to do rounds at your bedside so like you can kind of get all of the information as well.
Did you send any of them to a nursery? Was that an option or?
It was. So with COVID, they were like, hey, do you need to send the kid to the nursery? Because we couldn't have any other visitors. Like Joe could leave and someone else could replace him, but I couldn't have two visitors at the same time.
Gotcha, yeah.
And so we didn't necessarily have someone to be able to come in and be like, hey, I'll hang out with the kid for an hour while you two both nap, or like, you go take a shower and Joe naps. So I think they were more like, here, we can hang on to you in the nursery. But they also do 24-hour checks, and that took, I want to say, about an hour.
Okay.
But Elliot had a lot of things done all at the same time. So I was away from Elliot for an extended period of time, which I was not crazy happy about. But a lot of that was because of my previous NICU experience.
Right.
So I was like, we were like, we want the child with us as much as possible because we did not get this with Lily.
Right.
But when the pediatrician came in to check on Elliot, she gave him a look-see over. One of the things that they do is they like have them hold on to their fingers and they pull them up by their arms.
Mm-hmm.
So like their head flops back, like it looks really bad. And she's like, and like, baby just goes crazy, and she's like, this is what I want to see. Like, I get worried about my babies that don't freak out when I do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I know you know what you're doing, but like, I wasn't super happy with her bedside manner.
Yeah.
But it seemed like she had like seen some ish too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were like in like the top 10% of parents that she had dealt with before.
Right.
She was like kind of giving off those vibes because like she was like super weird about some things.
Okay.
But like, because I've dealt with you before and you're a speech language pathologist, because I had listened to like every single single episode that the pregnancy podcast puts out.
Yeah.
I knew to ask about like any tongue or lip ties
mm-hmm.
because that can be detrimental to breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure, because with Lily, I had seen like every lactation consultant at Good Sam, between like pumping and getting Lily to latch.
Yeah.
And just making sure that Lily was doing okay and her O2 levels were staying up while she was eating.
Right.
I wanted to make sure that like I knew that I didn't need all of that with Elliot, but I also wanted to make sure that nothing got overlooked.
Yeah.
So like she gave him once over and she's like, oh, everything's good. Let me know whether or not you want to do a circumcision. Like he got his vitamin K and his, I want to say it's the erythromycin that they put over their eyes.
Mm-hmm. You got that later?
So they, I want to say that they did vitamin K and the erythromycin while he was on my chest still. He stayed on my chest for 2 hours after he was born.
Did you do Hep B?
Yes. But she wanted to know whether or not I wanted to do Hep B as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think he had gotten that one yet.
Right.
So I was like, yes, I want to do that. And she's like, okay, when we take him back for 24-hour stuff, that's when we'll do that.
They make you sign papers right then when you ask them? When they ask you those questions? Are they like,
no.
No.
So this is part of like when you check in,
oh.
They'll ask you this stuff.
Gotcha. And then you sign
and like
it.
You're,
okay.
It might be like not every single nurse that you have, but a lot of the nurses that you have will verify this because they want to not necessarily give you the option to change your mind or like be like, are you sure you want to do this? Like they're not going to coach you one way or the other.
Right.
They want to make sure you're not being forced into
anything. Which is good. I mean, I know I've heard a lot of people being like feeling like they're getting pressured to get an epidural or feeling like they're being pressured. Like I had one friend that got Pitocin and she doesn't remember like signing a waiver for Pitocin. And
I never signed any kind of waivers for stuff like that.
That's so weird. Like I,
but like
weird. I would think that they'd want your consent before giving you anything. But that's
so,
what scares
like,
me about the IV too, is they can just put whatever in that IV. They can be like, here you go.
So
like,
no. Because anytime they give you meds, they ask name, date of birth, and verify that like you kind of know what you're getting.
Mm.
Even like if they're giving you Tylenol in the mom and baby ward.
Did you get intravenous stuff? Like did you get intravenous pain meds at all?
No.
No. Because I think Caitlin did. I think Caitlin was telling me she was like, I kind of got like just some intravenous pain medicine. I was like, that's interesting.
So pediatrician was about to leave and I was like, hey, check for tongue ties and lip ties. And she's like, does your family have a history of this? Like, and we're like, no, our friend's a speech language pathologist. We want to make sure that anything that we like, and we want to make sure that we have a good start or like breastfeeding and stuff.
Yeah. Cause
he had latched on right away. And even like my labor and delivery nurse was like, wow, don't know if I've seen a kid latch on that fast and that well before. And I was like, okay, yay. And so she goes and checks him again. She's like, well, he does have a little bit of a tongue tie. Like it's not going to give him any issues right now, but when your supply comes in and you get engorged, he's going to have a really hard time latching.
Okay.
Do you want me to take care of that? And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah.
Because I would rather get it taken care of now while he's very infant and whether or not like infant pain is a thing that they completely forget. Like
I know.
I'm kind of the camp where like, how much do you really remember of your first 48 hours?
Yeah.
Like, let's just get this taken care of now versus like six months to like 3 years down the road. We're like, now you are at a point where you're probably going to have a more traumatizing experience because of this.
It's so hard because like the breastfeeding class I'm taking right now, this person is very like natural. She doesn't even recommend like the cross cradle. Like she's like, no, like don't do the cross cradle hold with your kid. And like,
that's
all this
only
stuff.
One that I use with my kids.
I know. And I remember you telling me that's the only one you use. And I'm like,
but I'm also
okay.
Very well endowed. So I have very few options for how.
Yes.
I'm well endowed and my kids are long.
Yeah.
So like football hold isn't going to work if I want to lean up against a couch because my kid is going to be pushing their legs off of the back of that couch going further away from me.
Well, and she talks more about like not holding the back of their head and like forcing them onto the nipple to reduce nipple trauma. And she also talks about like moving them so their face is symmetrical and your arms are more down to your side. And it makes sense to me. But then she also talks about like not doing like lip and tongue tie revisions right away in the hospital because of like the pain and the different and potentially difficulty then with breastfeeding because of the revision being done and that maybe they need that support from the frenulum. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much conflicting information. Like I just hate the conflicting information. It drives me insane.
That's one of the reasons why I liked the pregnancy podcast. And I still like, there's still some episodes that I listen to. Like one of them that I've got in my feed right now, because she talks about postpartum stuff as well. And so like one of the episodes that I have in my queue right now is weaning from breastfeeding.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, I'm not there with Elliot yet. I did it with Lily, and I remember most of the stuff that she had talked about before. Like I've given advice that I got from her to other moms, even if I haven't used it. Like hey, I have not done this. I have heard this as a suggestion, though. Give it a try. Don't give it a try. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But here's option F.
Yeah.
Maybe this will work for you. So I'm like, well, I at least want that information in the back of my head. So I'm going to listen to that.
Right.
I've listened to a few of her pregnancy episodes, too, where I'm like, this sounds interesting, just to kind of stay on top of things. But she's kind of like, this is what research I could find about it. Usually it's old. Usually there's not a whole lot of it because people are very hesitant to do studies on pregnant women, and pregnant women are very hesitant to enter studies.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
I don't blame them either. But she'll be like, this is kind of what the research I could find about says this, because she'll go into some of the more like homeopathic stuff and like, okay, witch hazel, that can help you postpartum recovery if you like put them on freezer popsicle pads. I never made my own freezer popsicle pads. I just used the ones that I got from the hospital.
Gotcha.
I turned out okay. Everybody's different though.
Right.
But it's like, so there is some evidence based behind that. Using cabbage leaves to reduce your breast milk supply. Science doesn't know why it works, but there's research evidence that it does. Eventually, we'll maybe figure out why, but there's evidence behind it. Like, this is the really weird thing. You can do it, you cannot do it, whatever. Actually, like, massaging your perineum and like stretching out your vaginal opening, does it reduce your risk of getting a tear?
Yeah. I've heard both.
She's like, based on the research that I found, I can't find evidence that it helps, but there also isn't any evidence that it hurts.
Right.
So if you want to, by all means, go ahead.
Yeah. I was hearing all this positive evidence for that like, oh, you know, it can't hurt and this and that, and you do this. And then my breastfeeding person, she was like, yeah, it's not really necessary and maybe don't waste your time. And same thing with like getting your nipples ready for breastfeeding, like probably don't waste your time on that.
Well,
like,
and like
some
the
different things.
The big thing too is like nipple stimulation can
induce labor. Yeah.
So like, oh, hey, yeah, you got that breast pump and you want to try it out. No, just hook it up. Make sure that it works, but don't like actually attempt to use it.
Unless you're 41 weeks and then
maybe.
My mom said that her doctor recommended it for me. Like, she did a bunch of that to try to get me to be born. I think she ended up having Pitocin with me.
But like, yeah, but that was also like she talked to her doctor.
Oh,
about
right.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously,
but
like
I had. So
I'm
here's the
say, do it.
Here's like, I was like, I'm not even going to bother commenting on this because I know 20 other people are going to comment on this and I don't want all the notifications from it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in one of my mom's groups said, hey, I just got my breast pump. I want to build a stash of milk before the baby gets here. That's not how that works.
Yeah, I honestly would not have known that you couldn't. Like, I will be honest. Like,
so,
like I thought, oh, if you wanted to build a stash before your baby comes, that might not be a bad idea. I was like, I wouldn't have known either direction either. Like,
yeah, but like
for that person,
no, that's not how this works.
Right.
And really, you don't want to produce milk before they're born anyway, because you want them to get that colostrum or
yeah.
first milk if possible.
Yeah.
So you're gonna end up building up a stash. Don't fret about it before the kid is born. I really wouldn't even fret about it until the kid is like a month old.
I actually had a mom on my caseload tell me, she said, make sure you have at least a little bit of formula in case when you're breastfeeding. She said that her son, the first night they came home, was screaming. He was so hungry and her milk supply just had not come in. He was super hungry and was frustrated, and they went out. Nothing was open, and they finally found some formula somewhere and they made him some formula.
Yeah.
And I was like, see, but it's so, again, like real world experience, I feel like trumps everything, because that's like, it's like, well, yeah, that's probably what I would have done too if my kid's screaming and acting like they're starving. But it stinks because, like, I know that my breastfeeding program is talking about, like, you know, basically, like, your kid has to build up your supply. So they have to feed really frequently, really small amounts. And what are you going to do if they don't?
So fed is best.
Oh, yeah.
That is my stance. As long as you aren't giving your kid whole cow's milk or almond milk, like, as long as you're giving them either breast milk or infant formula,
yeah.
Like, let's not be stupid about this. As long as they're getting fed, that's the important thing. Now, you can do 50-50.
Right.
You can go half breast milk, half formula.
Ugh.
Moms do that.
I hope I don't have to do that. It just sounds like a hassle.
Or you can go all one or all the other.
Yeah.
Now, with Lily, they didn't send us home with any formula, but I also came home with a ton of frozen breast milk.
Right.
Because I had pumped way too much while she was in the NICU. I didn't know I was pumping too much. No one told me I was pumping too much.
Yeah.
But then once I got home with her, I was like, I'm miserable.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was eating half of what I was supplying, and it got to the point where I would have to pump at least a little bit because I couldn't live with it. But you don't want to pump a whole lot or your boobs are always going to make that much. And her pediatrician was like, oh, well, you can just pump after sheets and then you're going to build up a supply real fast. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to have to feed an infant and then pump
right
away.
Yeah,
because that's twice as much work for me. So I just was kind of like miserable for 2 weeks while my boobs recalibrated. So I was finally making about what she was eating.
Did you use like a Hakka on one side? Oh, you said you didn't.
No, I never used a Hakka
on the other side. You don't have any trouble with that.
So like the first 2 or 3 weeks with both kids, like exclusively breastfeeding, was always a bit weird. Like there was one night, I want to say it was like the first or the second night that Elliot was home, he wouldn't latch.
Mm.
And I was like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Like you need to eat. You're grumpy because you're hungry,
mm-hmm.
but he wouldn't latch. I was like pulling out my pump, quickly cleaning supplies, pumping, standing in the middle of the kitchen and like shoving a bottle in his mouth, like, eat this.
Wow.
And he ended up eating like 10 milliliters and I threw like 20 milliliters in the fridge that he hadn't touched because once they start to drink it, like that bottle's dead in 2 hours,
right.
regardless of whether or not they finish it. I ended up giving like that milk to Lily. Like I mixed it up with some of her whole milk.
Oh, nice.
Because it was like, well, I didn't freeze it in enough time. I don't want to put him on a bottle right now.
Right.
We'll just give it to Lily.
Could you have had milk from Lily frozen that you give to him, or was there?
If I had it in a deep freeze,
okay,
just to make sure that it would last long enough. So breast milk is good for 4 hours on the counter, 4 to 7 days in the fridge, and then like 6 months to a year in the freezer.
Yeah, 6 months to a year.
Deep freezer is best. So like deep freezer is where you're going to get the year
because you got it closed more often, right? Because the lids close more
and
often.
It's a lot colder.
Okay.
The one thing that you do have to be careful of, though, is sometimes there are, I want to say they're called lipase, but I don't think that they are. Basically, there's a thing in your breast milk that can actually go sour if it's frozen.
Oh.
So that's when you want to use like a super deep freeze.
Wow.
And that kind of kills it, so it's not a problem. Or when you warm up your milk, you actually want to scald it and burn it a little bit and then cool it down before you give it to your kid.
Wow.
Now, don't do that until you start to have an issue with your kid. So it could be that your milk doesn't do that. Like we haven't had an issue with that with any of my milk, or like it's either not an issue with your milk or your kid doesn't care.
Yeah.
So unless if you're having issues, don't worry about it.
Did you hear the news about how you can now put cold and newly pumped milk in together?
I have not done that. I haven't heard
it's
about that.
It's very new. I forget what organization came out with it, but like it was like almost like the American Pediatric Organization or somebody like that.
Yeah.
ADA, I don't remember what it was, but they came out with the thing that said like they used to say like you had to wait till your breast milk got cold.
Like until they were both the same temperature.
Yeah, and you could combine it. But now they said you can just straight pour it into
I would say like room temp / warm, like fresh out the tap to cold is probably fine. I'd be more hesitant to go the other way because your milk separates.
Okay.
So if you're going to go from cold to warm, again, not medical advice. I'm talking out my butt at this point, but anytime you're dealing with cold milk, actually here, let me show you. It's easier this way for this incredibly visual medium.
I was going to say, is it all separated? Breast milk.
Yep. So I got a bag of breast milk on the table. Let's see here. This was pumped yesterday. So I don't know
how long does it take you to pump that much?
I pump for about 25 minutes and then I split my two bottles up based on bags. So I'll either like split it 50-50, or if I pump more than, what would that end up being? Like 350, because these bags can hold at most 180 milliliters or 6 ounces. So if I pump more than, say, like 11 ounces, I'll split it between 3 or more bags.
Okay.
Smaller increments aren't necessarily better, but it's better to have like 300. I'm going to go in milliliters because that's what the NICU used and that's what we end up using.
Gotcha.
So like 300 milliliter bags is better than like 2 150 milliliter bags because you don't necessarily have to worry about how you split them up.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see that there's a separation.
Yeah.
Where all my fat's up at the top and then this is kind of like different milk down here.
Yeah.
So anytime I'm going to do anything with this bag, I'm going to lay it down. I'm going to massage it. I'm going to flip it. I'm going to massage it again. I'm going to kind of look at it and make sure that it looks mostly uniform. Like I don't see little bits of fat floating around in it. And if I do, maybe I'm going to lay it down and I'm going to massage it some more. So to make sure that if I'm splitting this bag up between two bottles, one bottle isn't like 75% of the fat that's in the bag.
Right.
So you're getting more of an even distribution. And let me look at my freezer real fast.
Will you freeze that or will you go?
This I'll leave fresh. So today's the 15th. I pumped this on the 14th, which was yesterday. Elliot will end up probably drinking this tomorrow. Mm. So it'll be about 2 days old.
When
he's with my mom.
Mom. Okay.
Because he's with my mom tomorrow. But like if we're going to go on an extent, like if we have, so like Labor Day weekend, all of my pumped milk went into the freezer. Mm. And then we pulled out freezer bags to start off on Tuesday.
Okay.
When I put all my milk in the freezer, I lay it flat. And once it freezes, I stand it upright.
Yeah.
And I stack it. The left side of my fridge is the oldest and the right side of my fridge is the newest. So I'll pull from the left and I'll fill on the right. And when they all kind of start to lean, I'll just like pick them up and shove them over.
Okay.
And then start filling in again.
I was going to ask you something else too. When it comes to, because I was looking at my registry the other day and trying to figure out stuff for a registry. And I saw like, oh, there's a big box of so many breast milk freezer bags or bags or whatever.
Yeah.
Storage bags. And I was like, do you buy that? Do you try to register for something like that and buy that before you start to breastfeed? Or do you just like wait to see if you can breastfeed and then get those bags?
My recommendation is to wait and see if you can breastfeed.
Yeah.
My kind of stance is prepare to breastfeed, but don't over prepare.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, you're probably going to need some kind of nipple cream because hormones are just going to screw with your nipples anyway. Any kind of, like you can get a pack of disposable breast pads.
Yeah.
And then if you do end up breastfeeding, you can go and buy reusable ones.
Right. I like the little ones. I think it'd be interesting to get the ones that are like, that you can kind of like put on there and they'll collect, like if you leak. That you can like pour that in somewhere?
So, I mean, that would kind of depend on, that would definitely be a thing that I would say to buy if you need it.
Yeah. What kind of nipple cream do you use? Just a lanolin?
Yeah, I just use lanolin. I haven't really used it like a whole lot.
Okay. You don't use it to like lube up the machine?
No. I mean, pump? I did at the start with Lily because that's what they told me to do. And then I just kept forgetting to do it and it didn't really make a difference for me. Okay. So probably what it'll do is it'll make it so you can turn up the machine a little bit more. But then I'm kind of like crank it as high as you think you can tolerate it and then back down a little bit.
Was that a whole different experience when you had, because you just started pumping with Lily, but then when you went to, right, like you didn't breastfeed with her at all for a while, so you were pumping, and then was that like a whole different experience when Elliot first latched? Was that like, was that painful? Was that,
it was
not, I mean,
different.
Okay.
So with,
well, you kind of, I mean, you knew what breastfeeding was anyway because you did eventually breastfeed Lily, but
yeah, but like I'm not gonna say that your boobs develop calluses because they don't, but they just get thicker skin. Mm-hmm. And like they know what they're able to tolerate more.
Yeah,
but you have to build up that tolerance. So with Lily, I definitely needed the nipple cream because I was dealing with pumping all of the time. It wasn't until Lily was over a week old that we were actually able to try breastfeeding.
Right.
Because when she was on a high flow cannula, we could actually, was she on the CPAP? It was either when she was on the CPAP or on the high flow cannula, they were finally able to install in a feeding tube. And so when they did that, then she was finally able to start getting breast milk. But it was like, you get 10 milliliters and then we're going to slowly like wean down your lipids. And then the next feeding, we're going to give you like 15 milliliters. Like it was very small amounts because their stomach starts off the size of a marble and slowly expands as they eat more food. Well, at that point, Lily hadn't had any food.
Right.
So they couldn't just be like, well, you're this big, so you're supposed to eat 120 milliliters of feeding. So let's give you 120 milliliters because her stomach's not that big.
Right.
But as soon as I was able to pump, even though she didn't have a feeding tube, we would smear some breast milk in her mouth.
Mm.
So once I was able to pump up enough breast milk where I could like give the NICU some, they'd get these like little tiny 5 milliliter syringes and you'd get a little Q-tip swab and you'd stick it in a little syringe and then you'd swab the inside of her mouth.
Aww.
And you'd stick it in a little syringe and you'd swab inside her mouth just so she could get that good bacteria.
Right.
And some of the nutrients, but not really much at all. And then it was seeing what the difference was between breastfeeding and pumping as far as like, oh, this feels like a thing. It's not quite the same thing as when I'm pumping, but I can definitely tell that she's doing something.
How much time did you go between, once things normaled out, like how much time do you leave between breasts?
It really depends on the kid. So with Lily, I want to say I was probably doing like 5 to 7 minutes per side.
But then did you like rest and digest, allow her to wait between, or did you just kind of go right from one to the other?
Neither of my children would tolerate that.
Okay, that's fair.
Elliot kind of screams if I wait too long to like put myself back together to then get the other side ready for him. Like, there's a fresh boob coming for you. I just need you to chill out a bit. But with Elliot, I was doing like 4 or 5 minutes aside. And then I noticed like Lily rarely, if ever, spit up. Like, I think she spit up twice. And the first time she did it, I freaked out and I called the pediatrician because I was like, my kid just threw up. Like, I think she's sick.
Oh my God.
And they're like, was it projectile vomiting? Like, was there force behind it? Was it a lot of quantity? Was it just kind of like semi-watery milk? And I'm like, it was just kind of semi-watery milk and there wasn't a lot of force behind it. They're like, yeah, she just spit up. She's fine. Let us know if it happens again and then maybe we'll be concerned about it.
Oh my gosh.
But then with Elliot, he was spitting up almost every time that I fed him. Mm. So I was like, okay, you get less food now. So he would get to eat 4 minutes on each side.
Okay.
And
I remember you saying that. Yeah.
So I have an app that I use.
Oh yeah, tell me.
And it is, Joe found it when Lily came home. And originally it was on his phone and then I had to take it off of his phone and put it on my phone because unfortunately
it won't connect.
It won't connect.
Okay. Because I had a client I just talked to that said she recommended getting like a breastfeeding app or getting some kind of feeding app for your kid. And she said that the one they got was like, it connected to all the phones. I think hers was just like Feed Baby or something like that.
Yeah. So mine's free. It's called Baby Tracker.
Okay.
And it's a green logo with like a little buggy, like bassinet push stroller carriage on it. It lets me put in multiple children. So I still have Lily in here and I have Elliot. So now Lily, at this point, I only use hers for like height tracking.
Gotcha.
But Elliot's I use for diaper changes and then food.
Okay.
So, and really at this point, it's only breastfeeding. You don't have to be super anal about how much time they get on each side as long as you're like kind of making sure that it's even. And like, I know a lot of moms that are like, oh, kid's hungry. I'm just going to stick them on this phone for a while. And then when they kind of get bored of that, I'm going to stick them on this other one. I don't know if it's because of the oversupply that I had with Lily,
right,
or just because I can overproduce. Like, I'm prone to it. So like when Elliot was like 2-ish weeks old, I was super engorged.
Mm.
And like I had to try to figure out how to get through that again. And then I didn't really have any issues after that. So with this app with Lily, at first I would use it to track how much she was eating for me and how much she was eating from bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And with her, I didn't necessarily have to worry about the numbers as much because we did come home with a huge supply of milk from the hospital.
Yeah.
Because, hey, maybe you should have told me to take a chill pill.
I would have. If that's my biggest complaint,
that's a pretty petty complaint.
Well, no, not even that. I was just thinking like, what else are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like in this time, you would have been constantly feeding her. So like, I wouldn't have known how much you should have been making or not. Like doing all this research now, I'm like, fascinating that some people can make so much and be an overproducer and some people can't make enough or make enough fat or whatever. Yeah.
It definitely changes. So like with Lily, when I went back to work, it was okay. Now I have to pump twice a day.
Mm.
Really, I should probably be pumping 3 times a day because they say that every time the kid eats, you should be pumping because that's telling your boobs, hey, kid is getting a meal right now, regardless of whether or not the kid is the one eating from you.
Gotcha.
That's not necessarily realistic in a 9-to-5 job,
right?
Which really mine's more like 8-to-5, but whatever. At the start with Lily, I would try to carve out like 2 times a day to pump.
Gotcha.
And it wouldn't necessarily be able to happen. I got to the point where I put an alarm on my smartwatch for 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Mm.
And I said, when this alarm goes off, like you need to start making your way to your room to go pump.
Yeah, you gotta take your smoke break, Caroline.
Yeah.
I remember being in a job where people were taking their smoke breaks all the time and it was like, oh, I didn't get to do my smoke break. You gotta do your pumping break.
So eventually I got to the point where I would just pump once a day with Lily and I would do it like more in the afternoon than in the morning just because that was what I realistically had time for.
Right.
And like, it's one thing to be hooked up to a kid.
Right.
It's another thing to be hooked up to a machine.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, I'm not getting anything out of this relationship other than like, we're not really good friends.
No.
And like, honestly, the pump that I had with Lily, I was not a huge fan of.
I was going to ask you, so what kind of pump did you have? Because I got to start looking into like, they were like, oh, you got to look at all these different websites and stuff. And so I have to take a look at these websites and determine which ones are available to me. But I didn't know like which one you liked, which one you didn't like.
I went through Aeroflow, AEROFLOW, for my first breast pump. And I should have done more research before I went with them.
Okay.
Because they just kind of called me up and said, well, what breast pump do you want? And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, well, this one's our popular one. And I'm like, I guess that one? So I ended up with the motif Luna.
Okay.
Did not like it. Too many of the parts were cheap plastic. So I would have to get new parts. When I was using it the most, I would have to get new parts once a month.
Ooh.
Which Aeroflow was really good about facilitating because they contact me once a month asking me if I wanted replacement parts. But now I have a Medela Pumpin' Style Advanced.
I've heard really good things about that.
I love it.
So when you had Elliot, they let you have another free breast pump, or did you have to pay for this one?
I was still able to get it through my insurance.
Medela Pump In Style?
It's the Medela Medela Breast Pump, and it's called In Style Advanced. And according to Walmart, it's $240.
Oh, wow. That's not bad, actually.
So it looks like this. And like it has its own carrying bag. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's like it's contained in its own little bag. But the one thing that I did like about Aeroflow is they're like, well, what bottles are you using? Like for your kid. And I was like, well, I don't know what kind of bottles the kid's going to like, but I have all of these Dr. Brown's bottles. And they're like, oh, well, we can get you an adapter to go from the stuff that works with this pump to the Dr. Brown's bottles.
Okay.
Which was great because the bottles that came with the pump were like 150 milliliters max.
Mm.
And my Dr. Brown's bottles are 250 milliliters max.
Right.
And the really crazy thing is like I've had days where I go to pump and I get like 280 milliliters out of one breast. And so if I had a smaller bottle, like I'd have to stop, dump it out, and then hook back up again. And that's just a pain in my butt. So the bigger bottles mean that I'm less likely to have to do that.
And you have a nursing bra that you use, or a not nursing bra?
Yes.
Is it a nursing and a pumping bra?
It's pumping bra. Do you want to laugh?
Sure.
I'm going to let you describe this. Let me go get it.
You're wearing it right now? Oh.
One eternity later.
Oh, nice. It's a lanyard. You have a lanyard? What? That's amazing.
Basically, it is two shoestrings.
Oh my.
And a piece of elastic.
Gosh. Is that supposed to be for?
It's a straight pumping bra. The photos of it on Amazon are hilarious.
Oh my gosh. But
it's fully adjustable. So because I'm well endowed, it's very hard. I went through two or three different pumping bras.
I see this.
Yeah. And none of them would fit right.
Okay. Oh my gosh. It's just like a string. That is hilarious. What in the world? It literally looks like it looks like two shoestrings. Caroline, this is hilarious.
It is I'm currently funny. Wearing a nursing bra. Nursing bras, they unhook.
Yeah.
You can be like, here, baby, have some boobie, and then hook it back up.
Is this your Kindred?
This is Kindred Bravely.
Bravely.
Yeah.
After you and I talked, of course, I got like a million advertisements for Kindred Bravely. And I was like, sweet. I was like, that's the one Caroline says is really comfy and, you know, it does well. So
it's hard for me to find
stuff.
Not
sponsored.
Not a sponsor. But please give me free bras.
Exactly.
I love them.
We need all the free maternity stuff, please.
So
funny.
Mm-hmm. It is the most hilarious pumping bra ever, but it's fully customizable.
Yeah.
So if you're like, if your nipples are wide set, if they're narrow set, if your boobs are high, if your boobs are low, if you can tie them in a knot, if you can tie them in a bow.
Right. Throw them over your shoulder.
You can completely customize this for you.
So this is the Medela.
So
this is Medela or no?
Actually, here, let me take one of those. So this is my so the bottom part is my Dr. Brown's bottle.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a very old style of Dr. Brown's bottles. Like this is like a generation or three behind whatever Dr. Brown bottles they have right now.
Really?
I got them from the neighbor across the street.
Oh.
Which is one of the reasons why I went with Dr. Brown's. That and
I hear good things.
Let me grab some bottles too.
12 seconds later.
I only have Dr. Brown's bottles in the house now because I got rid of everything else. Because one, we never even tried the other ones. But two, listening to the pregnancy podcast and the nutritionist that talked at my birthing class, they said originally we thought that we wanted a bottle nipple that matched the breast.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be kind of wide and not very long. And then we realized, no, we actually want a nipple that matches how the breast goes in the kid's mouth. So when the kid latches on, they actually end up pulling.
I suck it all the
way
back.
They end up pulling your nipple almost to mm-hmm. the back of their tongue.
Which is wild.
It's crazy.
To see the diagrams of them pulling your nipple all the way back into the back of their throat. You're like, wow.
And they just and if all goes well, like with Elliot, he just did it.
Yeah.
And he was like a rock star at it. So we just went with Dr. Brown's. And the NICU also recommended Dr. Brown's.
But yours don't have like the...
I took out the little green thing.
Okay.
So I do have all the... So Dr. Brown's have a like colic reducing insert that's two pieces. I took all those out.
You have to clean all that nonsense.
You have to clean it all. And it, our kids never had colic. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
I guess we still have time for that with Elliot. I don't know.
It was my understanding that colic is only like potentially most often in the first 3 months.
Probably. And like most of the spitting up is only until they're like 6 months to a year old. Mm. It's because they have to work their little muscle that closes up their stomach.
Yeah.
Because at the start, it's not very strong.
Yeah.
But so we only use Dr. Brown's bottles.
Did you have to get an adapter for the Medela? Because I know you said you had an adapter for Aeroflow.
I didn't, but it's not quite right. So they do thread together well. Sometimes one of them leaks a little bit. Okay. I don't really lose a whole lot that I really care about it. But so I have the bottle and then I have a flange and then I have the actual like pumpy part of like this. So the little bend is what does all of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little flap on it that opens and closes. So when it sucks in to pull milk out of your breast, this will seal. So it'll actually create that suction. And then when it stops, this is weak enough where it'll open. So the milk will drop down into the bottle.
Okay.
And that makes it a, so like these aren't a closed system, it's an open system because there's just a tube that goes into my pump. I threw away all the parts for the Luna because I hated them.
Yeah.
And I actually was able to cut my extra set of Medela tubes and stick them on the other pump.
Oh, that's funny.
So that's what I ended up doing.
I was just about to say, you probably could design your own, design and manufacture your own pump if you really wanted to.
I jerry-rigged it. And I like it more than before I jerry-rigged it. But I still like the Medela pump a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And at Good Sam, they only use Medela pumps.
Yeah.
So this part does all the work. This, the tube that goes to the pump, I have to run after I'm done pumping without anything in it, like without anything attached to it, so I can try to get some of that humidity out of it because it will collect some humidity. The Medela pump goes more like in, out, in, out, in, out. The Luna pump is more like in, out. In, out. So what happens is the out is so short, this flap doesn't always open and this starts to fill with milk.
Oh, wow.
So you kind of like have to like slightly unsuction your breast so the milk will fall down and it won't start like sucking milk into the pump.
You can't change the speed or whatever? Or the...
You can, but then it takes me longer to pump.
Yeah.
I'm impatient. So the one thing that I like about the Luna is that it has a timer on it.
Okay.
And after 30 minutes, it shuts off.
Oh, okay.
The Medela will go all day long if you leave it turned
on. Wow.
So like I have to set a timer on my phone and say, okay, hey, it's been 15 minutes. Let's check and see what's going on. And we'll snooze it for another 10 minutes. And then we'll check and see what's going on. And then I'll determine whether or not I want to keep going.
Could you just like sleep?
Or
is it too annoying?
It's too annoying.
Yeah, it's pretty loud. I've heard them.
Not necessarily because it's loud, because the Medela is actually pretty quiet. The Luna gets pretty loud. But just because you've got like all of this hanging off of your boob. Like it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to get comfortable.
Well, that's what I was thinking too, is like I've seen there's like one called like the Mom Cozy, I think, and it's like it's a portable one. It's like one of more, it's more affordable too, because like some of these like the Willow or the, like there's a couple ones that like you put in your bra.
Yeah, so like the Willow is $500 according to this website.
But the Mom Cozy, it's a little more awkward looking, but you could put it in your bra. It's a battery powered whatever, and it's like $60 for one pump. I was like,
so like I'm gonna say this too, like you could put that in your bra.
Yeah.
I don't have room for anything else up in this business.
I thought of that too. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if that would be comfortable to have it all tucked in there. Like, I mean, you know, when you're all said and done, it's like it's probably better to just have a regular pump.
Yeah. The flanges on a decent breast pump, you can interchange them to better match what you need.
Like your size. Did you have to switch a size?
There were two different sizes that came with this. According to the lactation consultants at Good Sam, I actually need a different size.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this works. Yeah. It is what it is. So I like, if I had more issues, I'd go into like getting different parts. But I don't really have any issues. So I don't really go into different parts. So talking about my baby tracker app.
Oh.
With Lily, I was tracking how much she was eating for me, how many bottles she was eating, and how much I was pumping. And for a while, the numbers were good. So like what she was eating was the same or less than what I was pumping. And then after a while, those numbers started to flip flop. And I started to get very disheartened. And I was like, I can't track this anymore. Like I will track how much she eats at the breast because I want to make sure that I'm keeping that about even. But
the time.
Like I'm not, like I have no idea how much she eats.
You wouldn't know. know.
But just to make sure that it's about even, because like they say, like,
did you do a lot of weighing with her? Like, did you weigh her at all? No.
Though, like, they do freak you out when you do your first check with your kid because they're gonna lose weight. They're used to eating 24/7 and having all of their needs met, and all of a sudden they're out in this cold, harsh environment that they're not used to, and they have to work for their food.
Yeah.
So they are gonna lose a little bit of weight. I have some friends who've never had to go to a weight check. I've had friends where they have to go like a week after their kid's first doctor's visit. With Lily and Elliot, we had to go again a week after they were their first visit, and then it was okay, they've met or exceeded their birth weight at this point, you're good to go. Like, okay, they have for sure gained weight. But I also have friends who, like, they're like, I hate weight checks because my kid had to get weight checks for the first 3 months of their life.
Yeah.
Because they just weren't growing fast enough, quote unquote. But part of that, too, is to make sure that everything's going away. Because, like, similar to a dog, a baby can't necessarily tell you what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, you learn their cues. You kind of get the feel for, okay, are you hungry? Are you wet? Do you just want attention? But especially when they're that little and you're that new to being a mom, you just don't know. So like, I had someone pop up in my newsfeed and they were like, fed is best all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And do not mom shame, because it's the worst. It just makes you feel like crap.
Yeah. I don't see many people that are like, you have to breastfeed only, or you have to whatever. Like, I feel like anymore it's, well, I don't know, maybe I'll see more of that once I actually have the baby too.
So like, she had brought the kid home. The kid was super fussy, but was also sleeping a whole lot, and they just couldn't figure out what was going on. So they ended up bringing her and the kid back to the hospital and said, okay, we're going to weigh the baby. We're going to weigh you. We're going to feed the baby. We're going to weigh the baby. Maybe they didn't weigh her. They just weighed the baby.
Yeah.
But it turned out that even after like 5 or 10 minutes of eating, the kid wasn't getting anything because she wasn't producing enough.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, they tried everything under the sun. Like, they were supplementing with formula, but like trying to get her milk supply to come in, and like nothing worked. And it's like, well, that's just kind of the way it is. And then we have another friend who, she has a chronic condition where like she got super monitored all through her pregnancy just to make sure that kid was doing okay and she was doing okay and she was staying on top of her chronic condition. And then after the kid was born, they're like, well, we can breastfeed, we cannot breastfeed, but if you do breastfeed, like, we're gonna have to like super stay on top of this again to make sure that you and baby are doing okay. And so she like maybe breastfed for a week, like enough for the kid to like get some colostrum, maybe get some of the quote unquote like super benefits of breastfeeding, and then was like, yeah, we're just not gonna do this anymore, because her doctor was great and was like, yeah, we still don't know everything that's in breast milk, but formula these days is really gosh darn close.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd rather your kid get fed and like be fine than like we potentially damage you or the kid. Like, not in so many words, but like,
I want to do it more for the convenience. And I know it's not convenient. Like, I know that like, it's
convenience, it's a bit of a misnomer.
Yeah. I mean, so, like hard work, but like, as in like, I don't have to deal with like,
you don't necessarily have to deal with like making bottles.
Know. Yeah.
You don't have to necessarily like worry about like making sure that you have formula in the house all the time, or like, hey, the kid isn't doing well with this formula, but really likes this formula, but now I can't find this other formula.
Right. I mean, different challenges for each. I don't want to have to do both, I guess, is like my thought, right? Like, I would love to just be able to breastfeed, so that way I'm not doing flip-flopping all over the place with all of this. Like, I mean, it is what it is. Like,
yeah. So like with breastfeeding,
you gotta do it.
It's convenient in the sense that it's like, oh, hey, as long as the kid can get to me, the kid has food.
Right.
But
then you can't do anything.
Then I can't do anything. And then it's like, Joe is super supportive and whatever you want to do, I will support you 120%. But there is also the like, well, he doesn't necessarily get that same bonding time that I get, because we don't necessarily have like the ability to like have Joe give him a bottle all of the time.
Right.
Because if Joe gives him a bottle, then I have to go pump.
Right.
And then you have to work on building up a supply if you're going to like go back into the office.
Yeah.
Because you need to make sure that you have food on hand before you leave.
I talked to my supervisor the other day, and I'm potentially going to be able to just do like, I might be able to do like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, I mean, I'm an independent contractor, I'm not gonna get paid for any of it, but like, I just feel like three months is so hard, because I feel like they're not like, feel like you're just establishing your routine at like 3 months and then they're like, go on back. But like, I also have the luxury of like, if I go back, I don't have to go back full time or even really part time. I can just go back for a few hours to see just a couple kids too.
Yeah.
So I don't have to see, you know, like a whole bunch of kids, but we'll see what I decide on whenever it comes time. I think it would be great to be able to take like 6 solid months to just really get everything settled and figured out and then really go back. And the kid's very sturdy then, you know, and
yeah.
And whether or not I'm still, I may not even be breastfeeding at that point. We may, like your mom, I may have just be like, I'm done with it at this point. But
yeah,
I'd love to keep doing it. I mean, I'd love to ideally like do a year or whatever. But I think that, you know, it is, we'll just have to figure out kind of what we want to do.
So like going back to, at this point, whatever will be like previous week's conversation.
Yeah.
Like talking about your birth plan. You also kind of want to talk about like postpartum stuff and what your goals or your plans are.
Yeah.
So like with delivery, I was like, I want to see how far I can get with an epidural, but I don't want to take epidural off the table. And the other thing with an epidural, I was going to talk about this like an hour ago because you were like super hesitant about having an IV. If you have any kind of inkling that you are going to want an epidural, you're going to want a saline bag because they have to get at least one saline bag in you before they can give you an epidural.
I remember you saying that.
So if you wait until the last minute, that last minute now just became 45 minutes to an hour because we have to wait for that saline bag to go through you, and like they can crank up that saline bag, but then your arm's going to be uncomfortable in addition to you being uncomfortable.
And that's the kind of stuff that I need to know about so that way I can put that in my birth plan to say, hey, I want, you know, I do want an IV because I know that I want to have the option of an epidural or whatever. Like,
yeah,
it is, you know.
And so it's more just like having some of this stuff like in a birth plan is nice, but it's also having your partner know as well so they can help advocate for you.
Again, that's more of what I want. I want it written down so Steven knows what to say, because I really feel like he's going to be like in the dark if we don't both talk about it together beforehand and write it down.
Yeah.
Because if I'm just like, don't you remember us talking about this? That's not going to be helpful in the moment. Uh-huh. Like, that's not going to be very stressful. Like, otherwise I can be like, refer to the birth plan. Refer to the plan. Like, just go to the plan and look at it, because I mean, and then we've already... I'm a big proponent of like, I write down notes, but I don't write down notes so much to go back and look at them oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mainly write down notes because I feel like it helps me to process what I'm learning. So like I'm sitting there, I'll write down like if I'm in a meeting with someone and I'm supposed to, and I, their goals are written down in our program or whatever, I'll be writing down the goals in the meeting, and the service coordinator will be like, why are you writing this stuff down? It's in the notes on our program. And I'm like, I know. But writing it down helps me remember like what's going to happen, like what we're doing right now. And then I can write down a quick note underneath of it, like, here's my idea about this outcome. And then I can talk about it really quickly. And then I'm just listening and I'm writing. And it's just, I find it so much more helpful. That's why this notebook that I'm writing currently will never be looked at again. Like, unless I really need to, like, I've gone back and I've looked at like my weight and I've looked at a couple other things. But like this notebook is not, I probably just need to trash it when I'm all done, because really it's just me writing down things that are never going to get looked at again. So, but it's helpful for me to help remember it. Like,
yeah,
now that I wrote it down, I'll remember that you said you got an Aeroflow Motif Luna that you're not a fan of. And, or I can, even if I do want to go back, look back and say, hey, she likes the Medela. So,
yeah. So, but like having, so wrapping this up about breastfeeding, and then we'll call it a night
because it's getting late. It is late.
Having what your goals or expectations are for breastfeeding. It's like what your breastfeeding wish list is.
Yeah.
So if it's, I want to, if I know that I'm going back to work after 12 weeks, I want to exclusively breastfeed for 12 weeks. And during that time, build up a stash so that I can continue to pump while I'm working and the kid gets nothing but breast milk for the first 6 months of their lives.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's when I want to potentially transition to formula, or like say, well, at this point we're going to take a pause and consider transitioning to formula at the same time that we're transitioning to food. Maybe not like the same time, but like we're just going to go like, not necessarily like go cold turkey, but like maybe 6 months is kind of my, like, if I get past this point, I'll be super happy.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal was to, and then like maybe, because like the WHO, the World Health Organization, they recommend breastfeeding for 2 years.
Yeah.
Not exclusively breastfeeding. They recommend breastfeeding for 2 years.
Right.
I want to say that like one of the American organizations says like a year, but really it's whatever works for you. Mm-hmm. So like my goal was I want to exclusively breastfeed for like, or at least do exclusive breast milk for at least the first 3 months. Ideally the first 6 months.
Yeah, that'd be my ideal, but I
anything
understand.
Past a year, meh.
Have you had to give formula to any of the to
no
okay.
So we managed to get Lily to a year. So after they turn a year old, that's when you can start introducing in cow's milk.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not medical advice,
right?
I would not recommend going cold turkey. So like you do like a 25-75 and then like a 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a 75-25, but not necessarily in that, like that quickly. Like you
right.
kind of step towards transitioning from breast milk to whatever your new supply is going to be, whether that's cow's milk or whether that's formula.
Okay.
But once they hit a year old, you can just go straight cow's milk.
Okay.
I think my mom said that with me, she just went like pretty much cold turkey to cow's milk. And it's like the same thing when you change a dog's food, cold turkey. Like
right.
I had weird poops for like 2 days and then I was fine as my body was getting used to that.
Right.
Lily didn't necessarily have weird poops because we transitioned her down.
Right.
Lily ended up getting breastfed for a little over a year. And then we like slowly transitioned. So like we would transition her day bottles to milk. So we got to the point where like she was just her day bottles were just cow's milk, but then I was breastfeeding her in the morning and I was breastfeeding her at night.
Okay.
So I'll be like the first thing she got in the day and the last thing she got in the day. And then we slowly turned into, well, she just get cow's milk in the morning because Lily liked to sleep. So we would just say, okay, like I would leave for work before Lily woke up.
Okay.
Which is hard, but it also makes it a little bit easier because since we didn't see each other, it wasn't like we had to say goodbye in the morning.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, I'm going to see you after I go to work. And like, we didn't necessarily have to worry about Lily having like a temper tantrum because, oh no, mommy's leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we slowly transitioned to bottles of cow's milk at night.
Okay.
So I wasn't like cold turkey in any way. I want to say it kind of helped me reduce down my supply because I stopped pumping when I was going to work, which sucked a little bit. But then Lily was still eating when I got home. And then we slowly took away the morning feed. And then we slowly took away the evening feed.
Were you all like weaned off before you had to start again with Elliot?
Yes, because like my doctor told me like, well, you can breastfeed into your second trimester.
Oh, wow.
And like really up to your third. And then like just like your boobs are going to stop making milk because they're going to focus on making the new baby. And personally, I was like, well, yeah, but I also don't want Lily to get into her head that the new baby is the reason why she's no longer breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that's partially the reason why. But we had gone to water aerobics class and there was a lady who was in La Leche League who was talking about how, yeah, it was so hard to leave her kid. She had a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old and the 2-year-old was still breastfeeding. But like, I don't know how old her 2-year-old was. I mean, Lily's
she like dual breastfeeding. Like,
yeah, she was
wow.
dual breastfeeding because she'd be like, no,
amazing.
I'm feeding the 3-month-old. And the 2-year-old would be like, well, you have 2 boobs. I get one of them. And I'm like, I didn't want to have to deal with that. So like on my personal decision, I was like, we're going to cut it off before Lily knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So before I was really starting to show, before we really were starting to like get into like, hey, there's a baby in mom's tummy. It was Lily's no longer getting breastfed. So then when the new baby came around, it was kind of like breastfeeding was a new thing for her. Like, oh, what's baby doing? Like, what's going on with this? Versus like, oh, I used to do that. I want to do that too.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. That's good you did it that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody's different. You do you. Personally, I did not want to have to be attached to 2 kids at the same time.
I would say, hopefully I don't have 2 that close together. But at the same time, like I told you, it's going to be hard. I mean, I don't know how close I'll have to have them, you know, if I want to have 2. And
it's a challenge, but it also like there are some things about it that are kind of easier. So like I don't necessarily have to worry so much about using up as many of Lily's diapers as I can before she grows out of them because, oh, I'll just throw them in the back of the closet and Elliot can use them.
Yeah. You never got out of the diaper stuff either where you're like, oh, I'm free. And then you have to. change diapers again.
The biggest recommendation that I've heard from a lot of like multiple like parents of multiple children is do not wait until one or all of your kids are out of diapers because then you're not going to have to deal with diapers again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can see that.
And I think that's a good stopping point.
Yep. Thank you for hanging out.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had this good conversation where we talked about pregnancy for like 10 minutes.
I know. We're definitely going to have another one. I think it's really, really useful information and I'm super excited to be learning all the things. So.
I just wrapped up an amazing conversation with Hillary where we went all over the map. But I like to think that we had a nice journey along the way. So it all worked out in the end. I have created some blog posts since this recording, outlining some tips that worked for us when we were bringing a newborn into our house, some products that we use all of the time. And I'm working on creating other resources as well. So if there's anything that you want to know, shoot us an email. Maybe I'll respond back. Maybe I'll write a whole blog about it. So I had a family member send me an email asking for like some tips and tricks because she's pregnant. And another family member was like, hey, she's got two kids. She knows what's up. You should send her an email. And so I was like, oh, sweet. I'll do a quick reply. 2 days and like 2,000 words later, I replied to her email.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I was like, so this kind of turned into a book, but I hope that you appreciate it. And she didn't tell me to go away, so I think that she liked it. So I'm working on some stuff like that because part of parenting is learning how to navigate life by adding a whole other person into your little family unit. And it's not always as easy as you hope it will be.
So during the break, I got another beer.
Oh, I got another. Whoa. This mug is full. It was empty before. What happened?
Well, we both got new beers. You got the same beer.
Yes, I did. I still have a blood orange common because it's so good. I mean, everything that they do here is so good, though. So it's really hard to pick another beer. I just normally stick with one because otherwise I just want all of them.
And I got just about the opposite of what I had before.
I can see through this beer, so I'd say it's pretty opposite.
But it's new. They just released it this week. This is the Westside Brewing Helles. And a Helles is a traditional German beer. If you go to Germany, you can say Pils, Helles, or Hefe. Those are the three styles that you are very likely to get in Germany.
I thought it was Hefe. Oh, how does the gnome say it? Hefe. I can't even. All I can say is Hefeweizen. I don't even know if I can say what all of the other podcasters say. Hefeweizen? Hefeweizen. Or Hefeweizen? They say it weird. I always do Hefeweizen.
W's are V's in German, so if they say Weizen, that's wrong. It's a Weizen, for sure.
Yeah.
Hefe. German is just like English. You can go to any part of the United States and you can be like, I want a pop or I want a soda.
Or if you're in Atlanta, you ask, do you have Coke? Can I have a Sprite? That does not compute.
German's very similar in that it has different dialects. They definitely do have different pronunciations. There's High German, which is what you get taught in college.
Yeah. Well, like when you take Spanish, they teach you like Spain's Spanish. And that mostly translates to Central American Spanish, but there are some differences. So every language does it. But yeah, W's are V's. And I should drink some more beer so I talk gooder.
So I'm drinking the Munich Helles by Westside Brewing. It is a lager. And according to Untappd, it is 5.4% ABV and 18 IBU. I couldn't find it on their website.
They only have some of their beers on the website. They don't have them all. They have a really impressive tap list right now, though. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm always very impressed with their tap list.
Yeah. Like, I probably should have got the missing link because I really like that one, but they only have it in cans. I'm super excited to see what he does next year, though.
Well, I can't wait for their Schwartz beer.
Oh, Schwartz beer. That's so yummy. We have to make another one of those.
We still have some.
Yay.
I'm probably more accurate. You still have some.
I don't drink a whole lot because I sit on the couch with Lily to watch Reading Rainbow and practically fall asleep. And then I put Lily to bed and then I put myself. Well, you put Lily to bed and then you come downstairs and you tell me to get into bed because I fell asleep on the couch. I hear you have a dad joke that will scare the pants off of me or something. I don't know.
Something. Yeah. So it's October.
Ooh.
It's Halloween.
Spooky.
I have a Halloween themed joke.
Oh.
We're just all over the place this episode.
I mean, our intro does say, see where the conversation takes us. Sometimes we don't even know until we get there. So it's in our intro. You should be prepared for this, dear listener.
All right. So why did the Headless Horseman get a job?
I don't know. Why?
Because he was trying to get ahead in life. Oh, I got it. I did it. I got a chuckle.
What? How did that happen?
I got a chuckle.
Maybe you just need to get 1.5 beers in me first.
Maybe. So before we close out this week's episode, we wanted to give out a shout out to Julia and Marco of Truth Beer and Pot Sequences for almost killing me.
It was kind of scary. Like, I recorded it and then was like, oh no, is this going to be the last video that I have of my husband? But then I posted it to Instagram, so it was okay.
Yep, I'm still here. So in episode 9, Silence is Golden, and this is, by the time this releases, that was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Marco retold one of my stories that I told about crossing the border in Hungary. And I just so happened to be taking a drink of water at the time, and I almost choked.
It wasn't even your first time hearing the joke. It was like your second, because you had stopped you had almost died in the kitchen while I was watching TV with Lily.
That was the first. I didn't listen to all of it.
You hadn't listened to it yet. Oh my God.
I listened to the first part, like the first 20 seconds or something.
Yeah, so Joe's listening to Truth, Beer, and Podsequences while I'm going through Lily's bedtime routine, which consists of watching Reading Rainbow because we're awesome parents. And Joe just starts laughing in the kitchen.
And then I pause it.
And then he paused it. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, are you okay? And he's like, you have to listen to this. Like, we're going to listen to this together after Lily goes to bed. And I'm like, okay. I don't know how they can top you getting a colonoscopy, but we'll see.
Which is fake news.
But so then we listened to the episode together and we're like, okay, two lies and a truth. We'll see how this pans out. And the first one almost killed my husband.
Yeah, no more attempts on my life, please. But in all seriousness, go listen to the Craft Parenting Podcast, episode 28.
Yeah.
Where I tell my version of the truth. And then,
which is the actual truth.
It's the best kind of truth. And then go listen to Marco and Julia recap that story in the Truth, Beer, and Podsequences podcast, episode 9. And whatever you do, don't be drinking or eating while you listen.
Yeah. Julia almost died too. So Marco almost took out like 2 or 3 people with one joke. Marco, you can't be putting out hits on Cincinnati podcasters.
Well, that's one way to climb to the top. Someone needs to Photoshop Marco's face and onto Bryan Cranston
from Breaking Bad.
Just have Marco on top of sitting on a pile of money.
Then there was only one Cincinnati beer podcast.
So that does it for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. We want to hear from you. If you have ideas for a show topic, if you have comments about a previous show, maybe you really liked it, or you learned something new. There are many ways to get in touch with us, to give us this feedback. You can send us an email at craftparentingpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Craft Parenting Podcast. There you will get updates on when new episodes have dropped, see pictures of our adorable kids, and more.
You would see the photo of our beers and our podcast equipment after we set up and then worried that Westside was going to kick us out. But they haven't, so yay! Thank you, Westside. You guys are the best.
Yeah, how did you like recording on location?
It's interesting. It's different. I think it works better if we don't have a topic, but I like it. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. Make sure to share the show with your friends, your family, or your neighbor down the street. It's what helps our show grow. You can also send us stuff to our awesome P.O. Box. I am always looking for donations of yarn and craft supplies. Steven really needs some pineapple in his life. You do you, listeners. You do you.
All of this information is available on our beautiful website, which is www.craftparentingpodcast.com. So go check it out.
That's where we put the show notes. Plus, I've been writing a ton of blog posts. There are some resources around adding a new human into your life. If you want to hear more from me, shoot me an email, or maybe I'll just start writing stuff anyway. Let me know.
Also, on the homepage, there's a form that you can fill out if you want, where you can give us your email and we'll send you a monthly newsletter.
Yeah. Your newsletter looks really nice. I read it today.
Yeah, it did. It did come out a little late because of we were at Oktoberfest.
Oktoberfest. We had so many beers. They were so yummy. If you haven't already done so, make sure you subscribe to the show. We are listed on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and just about every podcast app out there.
And with that, I'm Joe.
And I'm Caroline.
See you next time on the Craft Parenting Podcast.
I'm watching a video of a robot painting people's nails.
Test.
It looks super cool.
Testing.
Like,
testing,
I
want to
try
testing.
This out, but I don't like getting my nails painted because...
Yes, I am ready. We are recording.
Sweet. On the road again. That's all I know from this song. Da-da-da. Da 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 da. Is that the song? Am I in the right, like, I only know that one line. And then I think part of the melody. Oh, that's great. I like Hillary. She's like my best friend. Like, I mean, I'm a hot person, but do I have a hot mic? Now
yes.
I do.
Yes, you do.
Is that gonna end up in the blooper reel?
It might.